How's it going, everybody? Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Vietes Rundown. I'm your host, Manny Vietes. So March Madness is upon us. On the last episode, I interviewed DJ Fenner, shooting guard from University of Nevada Wolfpack. He seemed very excited to play Iowa State on Thursday coming up. And I know it's a late podcast for tonight, but I want to just get my NCAA bracket out there, some predictions, some long shots, and some NBA prospects to look at throughout the whole tournament, as well as where do they fall at regarding this NBA draft coming up. So just to start things off, you know, I wanted to start off with Nevada since I interviewed DJ the other day. So Nevada in the first round, they're playing Iowa State. I actually like Nevada in this contest. You know, I'm not being biased. I actually think that Nevada does have the potential to make it to, I'm going to go out on a limb and maybe say the Sweet 16 if they were to beat Purdue in the next round. But, you know, besides UCLA, Nevada's the only other NCAA team that has four players on their team averaging over 14 points a game. So you have Jordan Caroline, you have Marcus Marshall, you have Cam Oliver, and then DJ Fenner, who I interviewed on my last show. So with, you know, with those four guys, if they all come in there with, you know, with the mindset that Musselman's going to, you know, give them, you know, I see no problem with them, you know, winning in the first round. But, you know, they do, they're going to be matched up against the Iowa State team. They have, Iowa State has a very, very good point guard in Monte Morris. He has the highest assist to turnover ratio in the NCAA this year. His, it's a 7-1, which is pretty high, very, very high for an NCAA point guard. So, you know, that's going to be a good game to watch. If you live on the West Coast, that the game starts around, I think, 6:45-ish or something like that. So, yeah, make sure you tune in that game. That's going to be a good game. And 15 out of the last 16 NCAA tournaments, a fifth seed has lost to a 12th seed. So I think that is going to be Nevada. So off my Nevada rant, I wanted to move on to the West bracket of the tournament. And I want to dive into this West Virginia and Bucknell game. West Virginia being a 4 seed, Bucknell being a 13 seed. I actually see Bucknell winning this and making it to the Sweet 16. So West Virginia is a team that presses a lot. They have an up-tempo type of style. Their coach is really like a nitty-gritty in your face type of guy. But I think Bucknell actually possesses the right people to actually beat this press that West Virginia is going to put on, because that's how they basically beat teams throughout the regular season in the Big 12. So I actually see Bucknell advancing, and if they were to catch Notre Dame in the round of 32, I think that they'll be able to advance to the Sweet 16. So moving on from that, in the West bracket again, I have Xavier beating Maryland. You know, Xavier's always been the NCAA Cinderella team, and kind of, you know, established themselves, you know, from years past. And I definitely see them taking down Maryland. You know, it's just one of those games that it's one of those games you just want to take a, you know, just go out on a limb for, you know, because of their past tournament history. And, you know, I don't really think that Melo Trimble is going to show everybody what he was capable of last year. He should have went out in the draft last year from Maryland, and he ended up staying, and he's having a good year. But with, you know, with the amount of freshmen that are in this year's class, I don't see him even, you know, making it in the first two rounds. He'll probably have to go play in the D League for a little while. But yeah, I see Xavier beating Maryland in that first game right there. And then also in the West bracket, I have Florida Gulf Coast knocking off Florida State. Florida State a 3 seed, Florida Gulf Coast a 14 seed. So this game is actually going to be in Orlando, Florida, and it's basically going to be a home game for both teams. I see, you know, and I believe Florida is playing. Florida's playing East Tennessee State there as well. So in that, you know, that little segment in Orlando, Florida, you're going to have Florida State, Florida Gulf Coast, and Florida all playing underneath the same roof. So you're going to have, you know, Gator fans in there. You're going to have Seminole fans, and you're going to have the Florida Gulf Coast people. But, you know, Florida Gulf Coast is, you know, again, it's an NCAA team that just comes out in the final tournament and ends up, like, for the last couple of years, they've always posed a threat to upset. And so, I mean, I feel like, you know, if the crowd's right, I feel like if the Florida fans come out to go against Florida State, I feel like Florida Gulf Coast has a very good chance of making it to the round of 32 and potentially to the Sweet 16 as well. So then, you know, on a smaller scale in the West bracket, I have VCU knocking off St. Mary's. They're also just another one of those teams that, you know, you have to go out on the limb for. Their history just has them, you know, they're at a 10 seed right now playing against St. Mary's. So I definitely see VCU being capable of knocking off St. Mary's, because in St. Mary's conference, it's kind of a conference where they don't really get exploited to that many, you know, to that much of a wide variety of talent. So I feel like once they play against a decent school like VCU, it's going to be definitely hard for them to handle. Okay, so I want to move up to the eastern side of the bracket. I have, you know, in a kind of a long shot, I have New Mexico State taking out Baylor. That's just another chalk in for me. They played really well towards the end of the season. New Mexico State did. They won their conference. So, you know, that's just another one that I think a 14 is going to knock off a 3, whether that's Florida Gulf Coast or New Mexico State. So that's my other 14 knocking off a 3. And then I have SMU beating USC. USC actually just won tonight. I have SMU actually making it all the way to the Sweet 16 to play against Duke. So going back to SMU, USC. USC played SMU earlier this year. USC came out on top, but at that time, you know, obviously, you know, SMU's players weren't as developed. Same with USC's as well. But, you know, it's the end of the season now. You know, SMU has a 30-4 record, and USC just had a play-in game, which they're going to have to play again on Friday. So I definitely see SMU is going to. There's a history of teams that are actually, you know, who actually play a first game. They're actually, you know, more competitive when they head into the first game. But I feel like SMU definitely has a great chance of knocking off a tired USC after they played a competitive Pac-12 tournament. I feel like they'll end up knocking them off, and then SMU will ultimately be making it into the Sweet 16. So that's it for that side of the bracket. I'm going to move over now to the Midwest bracket, where I have, you know, that's Nevada's bracket, but I wanted to talk about Rhode Island and Creighton. Creighton being a 6th seed, Rhode Island an 11th seed. One of my good friends from Reno actually plays for Creighton. He transferred. His name is Cole Huff. But, you know, I kind of got to go against him on this one. You know, I see Rhode Island actually, you know, pulling this off, because I look at the spreads before I look at all this. I look at what Vegas has them set at, and Rhode Island and Creighton right now are set at even. And Rhode Island ended the season they won 10 out of the last 12. So, but the only thing is that both Rhode Island and Creighton have had a lot of injuries, with both their starting point guards going out throughout one point of the season. So, you know, that's definitely going to be something that's going to have to be addressed coming into this game. But I see Rhode Island coming out on top. This game is going to be in Sacramento, California, so it's going to be pretty far away from both universities. So it's going to be kind of a neutral court, and I see Rhode Island coming on top of that. And then on the South bracket, not too many upsets here. The only one I have is the 12th seed Middle Tennessee knocking off 5th seed Minnesota. So last year, Middle Tennessee shocked everybody when they beat Michigan State in the first round, and you know, everyone, I was shocked. I mean, you would have thought Denzel Valentine were gonna make it to the sweet to the Final Four at least, but you know, Middle Tennessee knocked them off, and they actually brought back a lot of their players this year, and they closed the season out winning 11 of their last 12, and they actually beat Vanderbilt by 23 this year. So that's like, you know, that, I mean, it's not really that much of a staple win, but from Middle Tennessee's team, you know, beating Vanderbilt, it's actually, you know, kind of credible. But so I have them going to the round of 13. I mean, to the round of 32, playing against Butler in the next round, and Butler ultimately beating them. All right. So that's all my upsets so far for for that first round, and then I'm just gonna move on over here to my Elite Eight. So in my Elite Eight, I have I have Kansas going against Oregon. I have Oregon knocking off Louisville. I just watched Oregon in the Pac-12 tournament. They look fired up. They have they have Dylan Brooks, great scorer. He's definitely NBA ready. I definitely can see how Oregon's gonna be able to top them there, and Oregon's gonna ultimately be playing against Kansas. I think coaching wins in that one because Bill Self always puts himself in a position that kind of was a joke, but yeah, Bill Self always kind of gets his guys in a direction to play with this up tempo speed. I know they have a great winning streak at home, but in the tournament, they always seem to, either make it to the Elite Eight or the Final Four. So I definitely see them knocking off Oregon because they're in a tougher conference during the regular season. And they're coming out for a vengeance because they lost the Big 12 tournament. So, all right, moving down to the South, I have North Carolina in the Elite Eight playing against UCLA. I'm going to go out on a limb here. A lot of people have North Carolina in their final, but I'm going to go out on a, far limb and say UCLA knocks off North Carolina. I think Lonzo Ball steps up. He's definitely he has that type of potential that he can just take over a game. He can get a bucket whenever he wants. But it's, this is going to be a big tournament for him. I'm going to get back to him later. But, if I definitely see if he can catch fire, if TJ Leaf can catch fire, Alfred can catch fire, I definitely see him knocking off North Carolina. All right, so moving on to the other side. A lot of people have Gonzaga losing early. I actually have them going to the Elite Eight, playing against Arizona. This is actually the easiest bracket, the side of the bracket out of all four. It's going to be pretty much of an easy road for Arizona to make it to the Elite Eight. And after watching them win the Pac-12 championship, seeing how hard they played against Oregon, I definitely and the Pac-12 is obviously a tougher conference than Gonzaga's. So I see Arizona knocking off Gonzaga big in the Elite Eight. So Arizona will be in the I actually have two Pac-12 teams making it to the Final Four, which is kind of unheard of because Pac-12 teams usually never make it to the Final Four. So yeah, I have Arizona going to the Final Four out of that, and then moving up to the east side of the bracket, I have Villanova and Duke. All right, everyone wants to go Villanova, and I'll touch on that in a second. But Duke's playing lights out. They just won the ACC championship. They have four guys in their team that are going to go either first round or first or early second round in the draft. And then it also goes back to a coaching thing too. I know Jay Wright's a good coach at Villanova, but Mike Krzyzewski is always going to get his guys ready. So I think Duke ends up pulling that out, and Duke's also the winner, also the favorite here in Vegas to win it all too. And so it'll be Duke against Arizona, Kansas against UCLA. I'm taking Duke to beat out Arizona, and I'm taking Kansas to beat. I know, actually, I'm taking UCLA to beat Kansas in the Final Four. So the final will be Duke and UCLA, and ultimately I picked Duke to win it all. That's just me just going out on a little limb, but I actually feel like Duke has the most potential, and as far as players go, and as far as coach goes, they have the best coach in college basketball. So I feel like that's just the easiest bet for me right now. They're gonna have three guys that are gonna go at least in the top 15 in the upcoming draft. So I just have to go out on a limb and just say Duke for that one. Okay, so I wanted to go, talk about Villanova a little bit. So, so Villanova won it last year. They actually had no players go in the first round or go in the draft this year. They had no players get drafted last year in the draft, which is kind of crazy for, NCAA teams, because usually, you think, oh, they win a championship. Okay, they have players that get drafted. But no, that's not Villanova's case. They actually, Jay Wright set up a program there where the guys are able to play there for 4 years, stay there since they're freshmen, and ultimately just grow, either go to the D League or go overseas after that. But you really don't see too much Villanova potential coming out of there toward centered around the NBA. you know, like the one and done market for championships isn't that great. You know, it only worked a couple times when, you know, Coach Calipari was able to get Anthony Davis to come to Kentucky, and then he was able to get Michael Kidd-Gilchrist as well. And so that, you know, it was just kind of like a, you know, just kind of like a, like that's a once in a blue moon type of thing that, you know, you get two high caliber players like that, and, you know, they end up winning the NCAA tournament in their freshman year. That's kind of unheard of. And so you know, like Villanova, you know, if they do repeat this year, which, you know, there's a high chance that they will. It's just basically because that they're able to breathe their guys in, and, you know, they don't go after young guys. They go after, you know, seasoned guys, transfers, stuff like that. So that's another option too. I just have Duke. You know, if Duke beats Villanova in the Elite Eight, you know, at least they, you know, or vice versa, I have, you know, someone's gonna win it out of that East bracket. So that's what I gotta say about that. And so now we're talking about players. So now this is the time that, you know, players are, you know, making their own agendas right now for the NBA. There's so much time. So scouts, agents, everyone's watched them play throughout the whole regular season. Everyone knows what their game's about. Everyone knows who they are, what type of player they are, you know, their strengths, their weaknesses. But right now in this, you know, in the NCAA tournament, it's just all about draft stock right now. So you know, right now, you know, parents are meeting up with agents, you know, asking them, hey, you know, like, you know, where's my son going to fall in the draft? You know, what do I need to tell him to do? You know, you're having the agent go out and talk to, you know, NBA coaches and be like, you know, who are you guys interested? Do you guys, you know, like, what type of player do you need? And then the agents will go back and tell the parents, yeah, you're like, you know, so-and-so's interested in your son, blah, blah, blah. And then going from there, players will make their, you know, will center their game in this tournament around that. Just in just a little bit of an aspect, because, you know, they'll go and look at a mock draft board and be like, okay, I'm like falling out of the first round. You know, I got to do something in the tournament to, you know, get myself back up to like a mid level first. So I mean, the tournament does actually give players a chance to exploit themselves, obviously, but it comes to the point where like these games are only, you know, they're all like decided by 2 or 4 points. You know, most of them are very, very tough games. And, you know, usually in the NCAA, there's, especially in the tournament, there's very, very bad refereeing. That's just how it goes. That, you know, that's just how it goes on the grand scale of things in college. But, you know, scouts are, you know, like these NBA scouts aren't looking for, you know, players to go out there and score, you know, 30 points a game, you know, and just, you know, shoot 20 shots, you know. You know, that's great, yeah. But if your team doesn't win, you know, what is that going to do for them? You know, they want to look at the guys that play defense. They want to look at the guys that, you know, space out the floor well. They want to look at the guys that, you know, they have the open shot, but they pass it to the guy underneath the basket because he has a high percentage from down low. Like, little stuff like that is what these scouts are going to be looking for in this tournament, because the range of players and teams is so big that, yeah, there's going to be 50 players that, you know, that score 20 points. You know, that's how, like, that's just how it's going to go. There's 64 teams in this tournament. You know, there's bound to be at least 20, you know, 30 to 40 players that score over 30. That's just how things go. But it's those little things that are going to separate these people apart. So, you know, with that being said, you know, I want to go into the guys that you have to watch out for in this draft, in this tournament, which are going to actually, which, you know, their play might actually help them increase their draft stock or whatnot. So, first team I wanted to start out with is Duke. So Duke has 4 potential draft picks coming up in this upcoming draft. They have Jason Tatum, they have Luke Kennard, they have Grayson Allen, and Harry Giles. So first off, with Jason Tatum, his season started off so slow, and his name was on the draft boards for the whole season, and everyone was kind of just wondering, like, who the hell is this guy? Who is this guy, Jason Tatum? You know, and then towards the middle of the season, Mike Krzyzewski's kind of played him more, allowed him to do his thing, allowed him to shoot the ball where he needs to be, let him do a lot of one-on-one things. You know, he's a power forward, but he's out there shooting threes, you know, spot up threes with the confidence that he needs. And towards the end of the season, that's, you know, where Mike Krzyzewski kind of, you know, let off the reins and let him shoot more. And then he ended up, you know, going into the ACC tournament, he ended up averaging 22 points a game in the tournament, which they actually won. So, you know, that increased his draft stock up significantly. So now he's, you know, he was floating around the 6 to 10 range, you know, for the last couple of months. But then after that great ACC tournament, he's actually bumped himself up into the top 3. So, you know, now you got teams that are like, okay, we were going to draft a point guard all along, you know, Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, and now you got Jason Tatum coming in there like, okay, you know, does Boston really need another point guard? No. So, you know, why not take a gamble on Jason Tatum? You know, it's not far-fetched for Jason Tatum to be drafted number one. And you already know the Lakers are probably going to get a point guard. So, you know, Jason Tatum, though, has definitely worked himself up throughout the ranks. And, you know, if he has a great NCAA tournament, if they make it to the finals and Duke wins, you know, there's no reason for me to believe that he won't get drafted number one overall. That's just how it's going to go. And so Luke Kennard as well, you know, Luke Kennard's definitely, he's probably the best player on that team as far as like, you know, basketball IQ wise, as far as picking his spot on the floor, finding his shot whenever he wants it. I kind of compare him to, a more agile, more, you know, he's like a JJ Redick mixed with a Manu Ginobili. Because he has the Manu Ginobili shot, you know, but he's JJ Redick because he can move off screens, he can pull up, he can do whatever he wants with his shot, you know. And I'm expecting him to go anywhere in the late first round, probably going, you know, I would love to see him go to like a, you know, man, if he were to fall down to the Warriors, man, that would be crazy. But, you know, like right now they have him going, to Milwaukee, which, you know, it's just a mock draft, but. They had them going around 15, 16, 17, so we'll definitely see what's going to go on with that, you know, and that goes for him too. If they go to the finals, you know, who knows what, you know, what scouts are going to think, and he actually might pop up into the top 10 or maybe around like the 11 to 12 range. And then you got Grayson Allen. He's kind of been falling lately. At the beginning of the season, he was around like 13, 14 to get picked in this next year's draft. But now he's at later first round, falling out maybe to the second round. See, like, and that's one of those players I was talking about. Like, hey, this is the tournament. You know, don't go out there and try to score 30 points, but do stuff for your team because you got other great players on your team, and you might increase your draft stock even more and not fall out of the first round. So everyone knows Grayson Allen's good. You know, he had that whole behavior issue throughout the whole year, but I definitely feel like he'll be able to make his voice be heard in this tournament and potentially work his way up into the top 15 of this draft. And Harry Giles, you know, this guy hasn't played at all really for Duke this year. And Mike Krzyzewski's kept on saying Harry Giles is that guy. Harry Giles is, you know, is the future. You know, his high school videos are nice. Everyone's seen him play in high school. But at Duke, you know, nothing's really happened. And you know, that's what these NBA scouts are going to have to take a gamble on. Are they going to go out on a limb and draft him because of his potential, of him being, you know, a 6'10 guy, shoot the ball a little bit, you know? And do you think an NBA team is going to have to take a gamble on him and see, hey, you know, are we going to be able to develop this guy into the guy that we wanted him to be? You know, I don't see him making that much of a push in the tournament. It's just kind of be like a guessing game with all the NBA teams coming up. So that's it for Duke. And then moving on to UCLA, you got Lonzo Ball, obviously. Obviously, if he goes, you know, if he goes deep in the tournament, he might go number one, or he might stay at two. I feel like if the Lakers end up anywhere in the top three, they're going to make a serious push to get Lonzo Ball. So I definitely see, you know, him going definitely either to the Celtics or to the Lakers, or maybe to the Suns too if they fall down there. And so I have no worries about him. He's going to be a solidified top three pick, maybe top two. And then another guy from UCLA you got to watch out for is TJ Leaf. TJ Leaf's going to go, you know, in the top 15 of the draft. He's an athletic big guy, 6'10", but can shoot. He actually can take guys off the dribble, which is kind of unheard of. I mean, it's not unheard of, but he's almost 7 foot, and he plays like he's like a 6'6" wing guy. You know, I watched him play at the Pac-12 tournament, You know, he's definitely that guy that UCLA leans on when, you know, when Lonzo Ball scoring's not up there. He's definitely that guy in the post that can, you know, do it, you know, get you a turnaround jumper, get you a layup. So I definitely see him having a good tournament, and that might actually increase his stock. He might be able to crack the top 10. And then moving on to Kentucky, you have De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk. De'Aaron Fox, you know, I feel like he's going to be an okay NBA point guard. He's not going to be a great point guard right away. But, you know, he's going to fall, obviously, anywhere between, you know, in the first round, probably, you know, top 20. I mean, there's a lot of NBA teams that need a point guard. There's about 13 to 15 teams out there that need an NBA point guard. So if one is able to draft him, they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be disappointed. He actually has a lot of room to improve, but he actually, you know, he's 6'5". I think he is. Yeah, 6'5". Yeah, he's 6'3". I mean, a lot of people have him going top five, but I feel like he'll slip a little bit. Maybe the Sixers will take him out on a limb and get him as a point guard, but, you know, we'll see what happens there. I'm actually very, very high on Malik Monk. I feel like Malik Monk is the best shooting guard in this draft. He's definitely that guy that can get a bucket whenever he wants. He has a rifle as an arm for three. I feel like he should be in the top five personally. But if he falls anywhere between the 7 or 8 spot, I feel like Sacramento should definitely pick him up because they definitely need another shooter or they can convert him to play point guard. It's just one of those things. And, you know, this tournament's going to do a lot for him as well, but I don't see him falling out of the top 10. So keep your eye on them. And then Reno, obviously, you got Cam Oliver. Cam Oliver is going to be a second round pick. I mean, but if Nevada has a good tournament and they make it, you know, to the Sweet 16 or round of 32, and he has a couple great games, who knows? Maybe a team in the first round will take it, you know, will evaluate him more, because Cam is a stretch four. He can shoot the three. He can take it to the basket. He can, you know, he's a high flyer. He's a distributor. The only thing about him, though, is that sometimes he looks lost on the court. He looks fatigued. Rather than telling coach, "Hey coach, I need to come out of the game right now," you know, he'll be like, he'll just stand there, wait for a play to develop, and just stand off to the side when he should have been taken out of the game. And, you know, that was just some of the things I noticed in the Mountain West Championship. And then also in the championship game, he kind of had a poor game. He was like non-existent. But in the game before, he had, I think it was like 28 points, something like that. He had a crazy, 4-point play from the corner. But he's just going to be a guy that, you know, that scouts are going to also take a limb, just go out on a limb for, because he's a stretch four, and that's what NBA scouts and managers and coaches want the most right now. So, you know, I believe Cam Oliver will maybe slip into the first round, but if not, he'll be a high second round pick. All right, so then moving on to Purdue. I've been watching this guy all year. I've said it all year. I'm very high on him. Caleb Swanigan. He has a nitty gritty attitude. He's like the Patrick Beverly of big man. That's where I say his game's at. You know, he can shoot, but his game is in the low post. He has a great low post game, and he's also a distributor as well. So I definitely see him going high in the draft right now. He's going to probably go in the first round. It's probably going to be, you know, like a late first round pick. But also, you know, if Purdue makes a run, then, you know, you never know where he'll land up. He might land maybe like in the mid 20s, somewhere around there. And then my second to last one, I wanted to go to Kansas for Josh Jackson. So Josh Jackson is projected to go top 5 right now. He's probably going to go, you know, either 1, 2, he's probably gonna go three or four or five right now. He's like another wing player. He's a slasher. He's 6'8". You know, he's a Andrew Wiggins of sorts, not Andrew Wiggins esque, but, you know, he can put the ball in the basket. He works well around the rim as well. So I see him having a great tournament. I feel like Kansas is gonna make a deep push, but his draft stock is gonna stay the same regardless. I don't see him moving up or moving down. It's going to stay right around that four to five range right there. And then last but not least, I got Arizona's Lauri Markkanen. I watched him play in the Pac-12 championship. This guy's the real deal. He's a 7-footer. He plays the point guard center position. He can shoot. He can shoot the three. He can get to the basket. This guy's the real deal. He's definitely Porzingis-esque in the American sense. So I definitely see him going high in the first round. I think he's definitely going to be a top 10 pick. If you see a 7-footer like that can do it all, it's kind of a no-brainer to pick him up. So yeah, he's either going to go 6, 7, 8, 9 maybe in the first round. So keep your eye on him. He's playing for Arizona in the West bracket. All right, so I went over basically my upsets, players' agendas, all the players you should look out for. It's all going to come down to tomorrow, Friday, and obviously this weekend. So I hope you guys stay tuned to the NCAA tournament. I'll probably be doing another podcast maybe around the Sweet 16 just to, fill everybody in on what's been going on. But if you guys, have any predictions or anything like that, just hit me up on Twitter. Let me know what you guys think, and I'll be back for another episode shortly. So I hope you guys have a great NCAA tournament. All right, peace.